ever witness this or die this way again. Note, because many of the names encountered in this book may be unfamiliar to readers and occasionally may even sound alike, brief biographies of the major eyewitness participants are included in alphabetical order for reference in the bonus material.
You could not make these landscapes up and have people believe it. Even as fiction, no one would believe in it. That is why, for over 60 years, I kept what I saw to myself. Until the day others who spoke about it were called liars, supposedly because the atom bombs could not have happened that way. For people underneath an A-bomb to have become shadows on the wall and charcoals before they could fall to the ground. No one wanted to believe it. But it happened. Miyuki Broadwater, age 8, Hiroshima, Nagasaki download.
Prologue. By accidental connections or by spooky action at a distance. In 1948, a former Office of Strategic Services OSS agent named Walter Lord, who had interrogated or, from a certain point of view, interviewed many of Japan's surviving naval officers, was struggling to turn a series of non-job-related interviews into his first book, A Night to Remember. The book itself was defeating Walter, although he now had enough material for a second book, fated to become the basis for a film titled Tora, Tora, Tora. He feared that neither would ever be published. Walter had not yet found the music of the words, not yet found his voice. About the spring of that same year, he came across a novel by another struggling writer named Morgan Robertson, who, in 1898, had published a science fiction story about a futuristic luxury Atlantic steamship, the largest floating object ever built by human hands, destined to make its acquaintance with hubris, and an iceberg on a cold April night. The novel was an obscure penny dreadful which, commercially, had failed miserably. It was regarded in its day as a storyline so improbable and so contrived that no reader could be expected to suspend disbelief. As it turned out, scientific and historical reality eventually caught up with and exceeded science fiction. On a cold April night in 1912, the Royal Mail steamship Titanic struck an iceberg 400 miles from Newfoundland, just like Morgan Robertson's fictional ship. It foundered more quickly than anyone believed feasible, and before escape became possible for most, much as Robertson's ship did. It was filled with some of the world's richest and most famous people, just like Robertson's ship. Both ships, as attested to in letters to Walter from real-life witness Charles Victor Groves, and as foreshadowed by Robertson's fiction, left behind the controversy of whether survivors had been mistaken through binoculars for fur seals or other wildlife and were, in real life as in fiction, adrift on floating debris or sheets of pack ice. The science fiction ship was 800 feet long. Walter's real-life Titanic was 882 and a half feet long. Both ships were nearly 70,000 tons displacement, with three large and remarkably powerful propellers capable of accelerating each vessel above 22 knots. The crews of both ships were complacent about racing ahead at nearly full speed into the night towards an ice field that they'd been warned lay directly ahead because each ship was believed unsinkable. And stranger still, Walter Lord thought, that Morgan Robertson had named his fictional ship the Titan. In a spin-off tale also predating the Titanic, Robertson's Titan had a sister ship named Gigantic. This time around called practically unsinkable, the fictional Gigantic was sunk in bright daylight during a war that was believed terrible enough to end all wars. The real-life Titanic also had sister ships, two in fact. Completed in 1915, one sister was sunk during the First World War on a bright sunny day by a naval mine in the Mediterranean.